This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950 Radio, it's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. National Night Out. I hope you participate. It's still a good program, getting to know your neighbor, especially in this day and age. If I can say this, Patrick, one of the things that is, Patrick, of course, is with us today. Patrick, one of the things that I will say about, you know, when you live in a neighborhood now, it's a very different world than it used to be. I mean, when I grew up, I was born in Minnesota, but I spent most of my elementary school days on Haverhill Avenue over in Wickford, Rhode Island. Wicked cool. And, you know, not only was there delicious clam chowder, but I will say everyone basically went to the same school. There was only one kid in our neighborhood who went to a private school, and everyone else went to Wickford Elementary. You knew everyone in the neighborhood. You knew their brothers. You knew their sisters. It was kind of the way it is today. Open enrollment, charter schools, private schools. You know, there have been times where there's a kid who will come by and is like, who is that kid? Oh, he's lived behind us for 6 years and I had no idea. And you're like, really? Wow. You had no idea. You know, it's kind of one of those things where I think National Night Out is a great opportunity to refamiliarize yourself with your neighbors. And so I hope people participate if they have an event in their neighborhood. So do you have an event in your neighborhood? Do you know?
Not that I'm aware of, but I will check.
Maybe we could get you McGruff the Crime Dog costume, and then you could participate. Because McGruff usually shows up at our National Night Out. It's always nice to have McGruff there. And, we have usually some of the local politicians. You know, police will stop on by. It's always fun. And then, of course, just get to see your neighbors. I'll be out at our National Night Out a little bit tonight. I hope you participate in yours. We've got kind of a humdinger of a show here for you, folks, look out here. Of course, Farm Fest kicking off today. Austin Frerich is going to join us. He is an expert. He's been studying the finances of ag sector. And if we don't address this, it's going to, you know, the ag sector is going to wipe out a lot of rural America. We'll talk to him as Farm Fest kicks off. Also, Patrick Cooligan, our good friend over at Minnesota Reformer, joins Brett Johnson. Brett will kind of come on in here in a little bit, and we'll chat with him and listen to him and talk to him a little bit later on your phone calls as well. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I've got to start off, though, with what is a massive amount of, you know, update news. And it's fast and furious. And you know, here you go. I'm going to this first half hour of the show, it's going to be all COVID related. A variant-fueled COVID-19 wave in the U.S. continued to show ripples in Minnesota. On Tuesday, the state reported a 4% positivity rate of diagnostic testing for the infectious disease, and the case and hospitalization rates are back above state caution thresholds. While Minnesota... Thanks, non-vaccinated! Boy, oh boy. I was a Catholic for many times. And if you heard the show recently, because of the Catholic bishops, I basically have left the Catholic Church. I consider a person, though, within that still does, you know, even though I'm not part of that church, does follow the Catholic faith. I consider myself Christian. To the people who screamed at me over the last year about how Jesus is your vaccine, that Jesus will take care of me and make sure I'm right. And I've had two people that have told me that who have, God forbid, and this is horrible, they've lost family members. I bite my tongue. I say nothing because I feel bad for these people. But when all of a sudden it's no longer, well, Jesus is our vaccine, and, well, apparently Jesus wasn't on your side. Maybe Jesus was telling you to go to the doctor and get a vaccine. I don't know. But it didn't work out too well for you with Jesus as your first line of medical choice. Instead, you basically went the non-vaccinated route, and God, you know, God help you, all my best, all my prayers, all my, all I can give at this point. You've lost a family member. Don't all of a sudden start changing the narrative. Well, Jesus clearly has a plan in place for us. No, you said he would take care of you, and he didn't. It's horrible. It's wrong. But I don't like it when people take Christianity and just try to warp it around whatever situation they're in as some sort of, first of all, as some sort of smack back against the liberals. Jesus will take care of us. You go get vaccinated. We're okay. And then when, God forbid, something does happen, all of a sudden it's like, well, he clearly has a plan. What he doesn't have is a medical plan. And one can make the argument that maybe the whole process here is that Jesus gave the intelligence to the people who made the vaccine and the doctors and the scientists and the researchers so that you could get a vaccine here, as opposed to just some sort of magical, you know, Jesus vaccine appearing in midair and injecting you overnight. I don't think that's going to happen. And so maybe the process was to actually create the vaccine, so you should have just gotten vaccinated and then you would have avoided this problem. But that's just me. I got vaccinated a long time ago. I'm Catholic, or, you know, used to be Catholic, but that's the deal. I don't like it when people, whenever it's, well, let me, you know, Jesus is saving us. And then when things don't go the way you think they're going to go, well, there clearly is another plan in place. Well, good luck with that malleable Bible you got there that you just kind of fits whatever circumstance you want. Because it clearly doesn't, it's not malleable to anyone else that you, when you start criticizing other people, everyone else has to follow it the way you say it has to be followed. But when things don't go your way, all of a sudden, time to change things around. It's tragic. It's just tragic. I can't sit here and scream from the top of this radio station enough. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. And I don't want you bankrupt for the next 10 years of your life. I don't. And that, in my mind, is the most Christian thing I can tell you. And once again, you do or don't want to do, okay? But this, we're going to own the libs by using Jesus. Jesus is right. 952-946-6205 anyway. Well, thanks to people who are not getting vaccinated, this is getting out of control again. Thanks, idiots. And I have no problem saying that. I know I'm a sinner. I'll ask for free. Minnesota has the 9th lowest rate of new viral infections among the states. Now, I want you to think about that. We're still above 4%. We still have the rates of cases and hospitalization now are above the threshold for safety, but we're still the 9th best in the country, which tells you how the rest of the country is going to hell in a handbasket right now. Minnesota has the 9th lowest rate of new viral infections among states, according to the latest federal weekly profile released on Thursday, rising the positivity rate suggests a resurgence of the spread of coronavirus that causes COVID-19. The positivity rate has been as high as 15.5% at the peak of COVID-19 last fall, but it dropped to 1.1% at the start of July. I believe that was the 7-week average they were referencing. It actually got below 1 on a few individual days. State Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm on Monday said a very opportunistic Delta variant is fueling the latest uptick, with roughly a third of eligible Minnesotans 12 and older having received no vaccine against COVID-19. Viral loads have tended to be much higher in people infected with the Delta variant, even in rare breakthrough cases involving vaccinated people. Rare. It's mostly unvaccinated. Basically, it's if you get Delta, you're more than likely going to give it to someone else. Heading back up to the case counts is a direction no one wants to go, Malcolm said. While the positivity rate remains below the state caution threshold of 5%, Minnesota's COVID-19 hospitalizations and infection rates are both back above the state caution thresholds for the first time since the end of May. Thanks, fools! The Minnesota Department of Health on Tuesday reported 1,667 more diagnosed infections. Now, once again, I want to remind you, we said this yesterday. Monday's numbers were in the 600 range, but that was dealing with just Friday's count. The Tuesday count includes Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. That's why it's at 1,667. Not saying that's good, because that is still 560? Is it 560? 560 cases on average per day. That's not good. But still, it's, as you say, 1,667. That's not an individual day. That's a 3-day period. Another 4 COVID-19 deaths. Once again, every one of these is tragic. The additions raise Minnesota's pandemic totals to 614,990 known infections, 7,678 COVID-19 deaths. The state on Tuesday also reported 248 COVID-19 hospitalizations in Minnesota, up from a low of 90 3 weeks ago. Malcolm said studies have shown that all three COVID-19 vaccines substantially reduce the risk of severe illness and death, and she hoped fatalities would remain lower in this latest wave when compared to others. And the results, healthcare providers such as Allina and Fairview responded to the variant risk with vaccine mandates for employees. The University of St. Thomas announced a vaccine requirement. As a matter of fact, I'm going to have, and coming up here in just a moment, a complete rundown of not only places that are requiring vaccines, and this is changing every single minute. So this might not be up to date. I got these lists from Bring Me the News, and they might be already be adding on to them. So just keep that in mind. It's best that my best suggestion is get vaccinated, take a mask with you wherever you go, because you're probably going to need both. Other organizations, Target, responded to the new Center for Disease Control Prevention guidance by requiring masks. Vaccine levels remain below state targets, but the state data showed that a gradual increase in doses administered from 36,033 in the week beginning July 14th to 41,007 in the week beginning July 18th to 45,111 the week beginning July 25th. You're starting to come around. Slowly but surely, some people are actually wearing disguises to go get vaccinated. How crazy is that? But hey, you know, if that's what floats your boat, I don't care. I don't care. Get vaccinated. It's not, I don't care. Just go get vaccinated. The state, and by the way, it tells me a lot about where you're at in the state and where you're at as a person, where you feel as if the shame of getting a proven medical solution that your political agenda has vilified, has driven you to wear a costume to the pharmacist, you're going to have to deal with that at some point. I'm just going to say it. But, you know, if that's what gets you there, I don't care. Go. We won't say anything. What thump? The state on Tuesday reached a first dose vaccination rate of 69% of people 16 and older. The state had initially sought to reach 70% of that population by July 1st, fell short amid slowdowns in vaccinations because people stopped getting vaccinations. I will put out some good news, Patrick. I know you've been subjected here, Maddie's gloom hour here every freaking day with this, but how about a good number? As of August 1st, the state reported that 3,170,942 people had received at least one dose, and for the first time ever, 3,004,629 have completed the vaccination series. We are over 3 million people in the state fully vaccinated. Bravo. Was that hard? It didn't seem that hard. We were close already, but things slowed down. I will also mention FarmFest. They actually have tomorrow is a free vaccination day. They're going to have a full day of vaccination out there. It's going to be interesting because, let's face it, I wouldn't be surprised if some Minnesota Republicans and some anti-vaxxers, like the witch doctor himself. is that right? No, it's Dr. Jensen. I'm wrong. I'm sorry. I said witch doctor. It's Dr. Jensen. He's a Republican nominee for governor. My mistake. Oops. My bad. It's a comedy show. I crack jokes. Yeah, I talk politics, but I crack jokes. Anywho, I wonder if he'll show up to protest that at FarmFest. My guess is probably not, but it'll be interesting to see if that does happen. The other news, and this one, not a surprise. We talked about this yesterday. Will you go to the state fair? Because right now, I'm not going to the state fair without a mask. And if this continues to get worse as incrementally as it is per day, I'll be honest, I'm not going to the fair. If every day this gets worse, because you already know some idiot is going to be there. He's going to have a kid or his brother or himself. He's like, don't feel that good, but I sure gotta go get my cheese curds on. And he goes to the fair, spends half the day there, most of it without a mask on, immediately goes home, decides, I better go get tested because I'm feeling really bad. I've got COVID. Where were you? Well, I was over at the Midway. What? Were you wearing a mask? Masks are for losers. Oh, my God. Are you vaccinated? No. Oh, my God. That's kind of where I'm kind of thinking that's going to go. The Minnesota State Fair will likely require face masks indoors when it opens on August 26th. Jerry Hammer, the fair's general manager, told Bring Me the News that while no final decision has been made as of Tuesday morning, An indoor mask mandate appears likely based on what we know today and what's the likely scenario, he said through noted things can change quickly. The rapid spread of the highly transmissible Delta variant and corresponding rise in infections has prompted a flurry of vaccine and or mask-related requirement announcements from business venues and institutions throughout the state, including the University of Minnesota, Target, First Avenue municipalities. Hammer said that the state fair is constantly monitoring the public health situation here and elsewhere. They are in regular communication with the Minnesota Department of Health, he added, and will continue to keep an eye on things over the next 3 weeks during which the new COVID-19 protocol announcements are possible. An indoor face mask mandate would occur regardless of transmission levels in Ramsey County and regardless of a person's vaccination status, Hammer said, citing CDC guidelines. He said the fair sign shops are making up signs right now in anticipation of the decision. As of Tuesday morning, the entire seven-county Twin Cities metro area has substantial transmission, meaning the CDC recommends the use of masks in indoor public spaces. Fair organizers also haven't ruled out a daily attendance limit should the situation require it. Hammer said discussions around COVID-19 are ongoing, as they have been for more than a year now, he said. State Fair officially got the green light going on June, shortly after Governor Walz lifted many of the state's pandemic measures. The fair at the time, still barring significant shifts in the public health institution, there would be no vaccination requirements, no attendance limits, and no face mask mandate for those who are fully vaccinated. That's the official state for COVID protocol at this time, but the curveball seen over the past week, which is the Delta variant and rapid spreading among the unvaccinated, Hammer said means organizers could implement new requirements in the weeks ahead in wide open nature area that defines most state park experiences helps. It said the data shows transmission risk is open in open air is low. Well, I guess here's a great question for you. State Fair goes on, and there's a mask mandate. How many fist fights will there break out every day of guys that are not wearing masks punching because they're getting confronted by people who are wearing masks, telling them to put a mask on, actually getting into a physical altercation? My guess is most of them are going to happen right outside the midway in a very specific area where alcohol is served, I'm going to guess, and most of them in the evening, late afternoon, evening. But my guess is we will have 10 to 20 fist fights a day at the Minnesota State Fair between non-maskers and maskers. That's going to be my over-under. And make sure you see the world's tiniest pony. Shorty in the club. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I got more. I got a lot more. And coming up here, we have as well, in just a little bit, Austin Frerich is going to join us. We'll talk about ag finances and how it's hurting the rural America. It is the Matt McNeil Show. We'll take a break. Come on back right here on AM 950. The Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Thank you very much to Todd Colet, sponsoring AM 950 all this week. Thank you very much. He lives in Spain, can't visit our clients, but he wants to help out, and so he does by sponsoring us, and you can too. Go call us at 952-946-8885, 952-946-8885, and you can ask for how you could sponsor the station. He, of course, is encouraging you to get vaxxed and follow local mask guidelines you got to do this. You got to do this. It's important. They even got a song. Is It Monday, which I linked to this morning. You can find it on the Twitter feed and on the Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show Facebook page. By all means, go check that out and get vaccinated. Get masked up. Thank you very much, Todd. We do appreciate it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. All right. Back to the Minnesota coronavirus update. 2 months after dropping their citywide mask mandates, Minneapolis and St. Paul are now recommending everyone wear a mask indoor in public spaces. Mayors Melvin Carter and Jacob Fry announced the change in a joint statement on Tuesday afternoon. They cited rising COVID-19 case numbers that reach substantial transmission and last week's updated masking guidance for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The pandemic is far from over, said Carter in a statement. These measures will help protect us as we continue to work with our entire community, until we get our entire community vaccinated. Now, here is a list of places which are requiring vaccinations, not just masks, vaccinations. Starting with colleges, Carleton colleges, students and faculty must be fully vaccinated by August 1st. Gustavus Adolphus is requiring college students get vaccinated, strongly encouraging faculty and staff to do so as well. Hamlin, They announced that on July 16th, calling a mandate necessary to require to return to normal. Hamlin's president. Oh, the ham line. Oh, line of ham. Oh, would I love to major in the ham line? Oh. Anyway, Hamlin's president announced all students and staff and faculty will be required to be vaccinated all semester. McAllister, students and employees who are on campus must be fully vaccinated by August 2nd, and that will give you more of a right to look down on the rest of us. Oh, sorry, McAllister, like you didn't see that one. It's a fine school. It's a tough school. It's a fine school. All students at the Minnesota College of Art and Design. McAllister's going to send me a bad note. Joking. I'm joking. You're a great institution. You're a gem over there. And every one of your students will tell us that. Anyway, all students, faculty, and staff at the Minnesota College of Art and Design who are on campus will be fully vaccinated by August 1st. The fall semester will also begin with a six-week indoor masking requirement. Mitchell Hamlin School of Law, anyone on campus in the fall semester must be vaccinated by August 1st. St. Catharines, all students, faculty, and staff age 12 and up will need to complete their vaccine series by August 16th. St. Olaf, all students, faculty, and staff must be fully vaccinated by the start of the fall semester. St. Thomas, students and staff and faculty must be vaccinated before returning to campus. Not requiring Minnesota University of Minnesota Twin Cities at this point. Also, the University of Minnesota statewide campuses. And just like the Twin Cities University is not requiring vaccinations, though, it has implemented indoor mask mandates. Entertainment, First Avenue. You have to have you have to be vaccinated to go watch a concert at First Avenue. Retail and grocery. Walmart has actually said traveling managers and corporate employees, but not yet guests or store employees, but they're starting to put a vaccine mandate there. The Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis has added a vaccine mandate. Allina Health has asked for it. Episcopal Homes in St. Paul, the Mayo Clinic as well, the M Health Fairview, vaccines, both COVID-19 and influenza required by staff, Sanford Health, the VA health system as well. Care workers will be required to be vaccinated by the middle of September or they'll have to undergo weekly testing. I'd be surprised. The VAs, I got to tell you, there's a lot of things the VA doesn't do well. Their vaccination clinics they had for the veterans went fairly well. Masks. Here are the places that have required masks at this point. Animal Humane Society, Cub Foods, all employees at Cub Foods will be required to wear a mask. They're back to that. And once again, we should mention this is staff. In some cases, it's visitors as well. But they're basically asking the Humane Society is asking for masks for everyone who's coming in, regardless of employee status. Cub is still on employees. Home Depot, they're asking customers to wear it. Sounds like the employees will. Kohl's, that's going to have their store associates and hotspots will be required to wear face coverings. McDonald's, Target, we mentioned Target yesterday. We mentioned Walmart earlier. City of Bloomington, City of Duluth, Hennepin County, Olmsted County, St. Louis County, all mask mandates for indoor buildings. Mayo Clinic, they as well have not only the vaccine, but they're also as well looking at the mask mandate too. And then I'll tell you what, I'll have to save this. Dynamo, I don't have time for your call. Thank you very much for holding. We did mention Lindsey Graham, the largest pile of mashed potatoes has apparently tested positive for COVID-19. I don't know. How would you tell he's looking pasty? It's kind of cold, but there's no blood in that man's veins. So cold, he knows. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. When we do come on back, we're going to get in Farm Fest kicking off today in Redwood County. We're going to be talking to Ostrich Frerich. He is kind enough to join us, an expert in he's been studying the finances of the economics of rural agriculture, and he's got some tough news about it. We'll talk to him when we come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. It's going to be kind of right tonight. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Tuesday, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I did mention as part of the Minnesota coronavirus update that Farm Fest is kicking off today. Tomorrow, they are doing a full vaccination day. That's going to be interesting to see how that goes. I've actually had to talk to a lot of journalists I know who are heading up there. I was like, be careful. Redwood County, where this is happening at, was one of the early outbreak spots that was already starting to turn with the Delta variant here in Minnesota. My guess is there's going to be a lot of people talking about how vaccines don't work and not wearing masks. Good luck. I've got to be honest with you. I'm very concerned that's about to become a super spreader event there, especially and the danger of it, too. Obviously, the amount of politicians we have going out there. You got to be careful. But with Farm Fest kicking off, it's a good reminder of ours to talk about some of the issues that are affecting agriculture. And Austin Frerich is kind enough to join us. Austin's the deputy director of the Thurman Arnold Project at Yale University, an initiative that brings together faculty, staff, and scholars to collaborate on research related to competition policy and antitrust enforcement. He's also a fellow at the Harkin Institute at Drake University, a senior fellow at the Data for Progress. Austin is currently working on a book that argues for restoring the balance of power in the American food system in favor of farmers, workers, and small businesses and communities. The book is inspired by an article originally published in the American Conservative that was later republished in the Cedar Rapids Gazette. He's kind enough today to join us to talk about the finances of the ag industry. Austin, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Matt. I just want to say real quick, what you just described in Farm Fest sounds a lot like Sturgis last year.
Oh, it did. And we saw what happened with Sturgis. My goodness.
Ugh. God, yeah. I mean, like, we even had people in my family had to deal with that.
Then we have the Minnesota State Fair, which comes up later this month, and yeah, it's good. This is the Delta variant is going to be interesting. I've lived for multiple times in my radio career. I have lived in rural. I've lived in Iowa twice. I lived in Eldora and lived in Ames. I've lived in Bemidji, rural Minnesota. My family comes from the Iron Range, so they've got a little bit rural up there. I'm familiar with it, but when I spent my time in Iowa, it became clear. To me, at least, that there was a fatal flaw that really kind of spun out of in my mind in the 80s when they had all the farm foreclosures, and that the larger farms started buying up all the land of the smaller farms, and once you started going down that path, it was never going to come back. I'd been in small towns across Iowa where I'd seen empty main streets, which 20, 30 years earlier had been fairly vibrant, but now had 70% vacancy rates. It just seemed to me is that you can't have the corporate farming mentality in a rural environment with a limited population and have any kind of ripple success off the side. Now, once again, I'm a layman. I'm not nearly as intelligent as you are on this, but that was just my observation. It sounds like from what you have seen that this financial model that we are seeing in the ag sector is just not viable anymore.
No, I mean, what you just described is the place I love is being destroyed right in front of me, and it happened in my lifetime. I remember driving county roads in Iowa and seeing hogs when I was little, and then you wake up a few years later, and all of a sudden they're all gone.
And it is kind of one of those things where it's happened, and people keep hoping it's going to come back, and you almost want to look at this like, how? How do you think this is going to come back at this point?
So that, to me, is actually one of the most hopeful bipartisan things out there. Mm-hmm. And that is why I'm very intentional when I write this stuff to put in publications like the American Conservative. Because let me be clear, I am a Tom Harkin, Wellstone progressive. But, I mean, it's very clear that ethanol is, you know, we're in the waning days of it. And I say this as someone where ethanol paid for my college. My dad's an ethanol truck driver. But it's clear that cars are moving to batteries. And so that's half the corn crop. What are you going to do with it? To me, is the hope here is we take that animals back on the land. What we've basically seen since the election of President Reagan is the collapse of the family meat and dairy farm. First it happened in chicken, then it happened in hogs, and then it's happened in dairy, and now it's starting to happen to beef. Where basically all the, you know, you have these massive corporate farms come in, CAFOs, put the animals in these metal sheds where they never see a light of day. And then, you know, you concentrate all that money and power into a few people, and it hollows out the rural communities. And to me, this moment offers an opportunity for us to move away from that, because it's not good for rural communities. Meat tastes awful, and it's not good for our environment. That, to me, is the hope I have in this moment. This isn't rocket science.
When you talk about, and I know you might have the actual numbers, I don't know, but let's talk about this. When you look at a percentage of animal lots that were around in an ag town, say in 1980s versus today, do you have a percentage of how many fewer that there are today than there were even 30, 40 years ago?
Yes. I actually thought you would ask that question. So I pulled up the figures from the U.S. Ag Census before you called me. We've lost about 50% of our cattle farmers, 80% of our dairies, 90% of our hog family farms.
80% of the dairies and 90% of the hog farms?
Yes.
It's interesting you bring up the hog farms. Gosh, I mean, how many times was I down in Iowa and we'd cover a hog lot that wanted to get in there? And of course, no one wants a hog lot nearby because of the smell. But it was something that was much more tolerated for a long time because the mentality is, it smells like money to me, that thing that would always say.
I want to push back on that.
Okay.
People didn't tolerate. I mean, so I wrote this article a few months ago in Vox about hog ban, where it's one man in Iowa, has 7,000 employees, owns 5 million hogs, has a private jet, home in Florida, yada, yada, yada. Wrote a $400,000 check to her governor in her last campaign. That's what I was always told was, these things just happened. But I didn't realize until I wrote this article talking with people and doing research was there was a rural rebellion in Iowa when these things were going up in the 90s. People fought it. People filled gyms. And it wasn't just, the hog family farm, who's, seeing their margin shrink and shrink because this other person's coming along cutting all these corners, which, by the way, these companies didn't get big because they just make the best hog. They got big because they're Uber. They cut every corner. They ignored all the regulations. They got big and then used their money to rewrite the regulatory system to their business model. People rebelled, but the politicians in Iowa didn't listen. They stripped them of local control.
Yeah.
I mean, even the thing I'll never forget is Tom Vilsack was governor of Iowa, ran for re-election 2002 against the lobbyists for this hog baron. The campaign, one of his big issues was anti-corporate hogs. Ran ads on these all over Iowa, promised to do something about it. Then he wins re-election against, the lobbyists for the hog baron. And then the largest expansion of CAFOs in Iowa occurred under a second term of Vilsack.
It really is, in looking at it from the Wall Street and the international trade mentality, the people that deal with this do not want to deal with individual farmers. And if they can get some guy in rural Iowa who's willing to buy up this land, they'll tolerate it because they think in business mindsets. And I can buy that completely. I mean, because we're talking how many, once again, 90% of the hog farms are gone and you got one or two major producers left. And as you said, it's the quality of the meat, the quality of the farm, the quality of the work for the employees, the quality of the product that's being produced, everything here standard as it was, but because it's just more convenient, it seems, for international financial markets to deal with something on that level. It's something that's it's welcomed, and they'll go against their own local communities to make it happen.
100%. I mean, that is – big boys like to run with big boys. Walmart doesn't want to deal with little mom and pa. They want to, deal with a hog baron. What's even funny now is they don't even want to deal with the hog baron. I mean, Costco has its own little chicken empire over in Omaha, and Walmart's playing in dairy in Indiana. I mean, is Amazon going to buy Tyson's next? I mean, who knows?
No.
But you're totally right. I mean, what's also clear with this hog baron is it was Wall Street money that, provided his jet fuel to get big.
Well, actually, can we just go back to what you just said there? Because I think there's a lot of people in the Twin Cities that probably are not aware of what you just said, that we are at that point now where corporate America that deals with high volumes of product of meat are getting into these ag sectors now. And yeah, it's no longer even the industrial ag sector. It's a Walmart, it's a Costco, it's whatever. They're the ones that are basically producing. They bought the company and they're running it and they're delivering the product themselves as a way to even make more money. But as well, it quite literally is that just corporate farm structure. There is no local mom and pop left.
No, not at all. I mean, the whole notion, though, the whole vision, I should say, the Michael Pollan thing for the last 17 years was, if you don't like this system, you don't like Tyson's at Cub Foods, Hy-Vee, whatever, you go to Whole Foods, go to some other thing. The problem is this alternative consumption thing didn't change structures. The big boys just bought the yuppie brands. You know what I mean? General Mills owns Annie's Mac and Cheese. Most people don't realize this illusion of choice. I mean, back in the day, Standard Oil was Standard Oil. Rockefeller didn't have 20 little oil companies with all these different names. But now we live in that day and age where the companies do. And so you don't even know. I mean, here's the thing. You shouldn't know. You have a busy life, yada, yada. It's the politicians. I mean, these were moral decisions to allow merger after merger after merger to go through. It should not have been approved.
And when you talk to politicians, let's go back to Farm Fest in Minnesota. What's every politician, Democrat and Republican, doing right now is heading on out to Redwood County to go smooch the caboose of the old, all these massive corporate farms. And once again, I one of the greatest facades of all times, the greatest red herrings right now, is how every one of these massive corporate multi-million dollar farming institutions portrays themselves as just some simple ma and pa operation. And the reality is this is, in my mind, what they're doing at Farm Fest is no different than if the entire delegation of all politicians from the state of Minnesota flew to Wall Street and met in some, you know, Wall Street boardroom with corporations. It's basically the same thing, only more flannel.
Yeah, I mean, this is what gets me angry is empty words. And I mean, I always use Chuck Grassley in Iowa as an example, our senator. I mean, first of all, the guy's been a senator longer than the Minnesota Vikings have been a football team. Elected official. I think he got elected his first office in 1958. I think the Vikings were founded in like 1960.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
But this all, I mean, he keeps, literally every year is the same song and dance. Oh, this is bad. These markets are bad. I mean, you're seeing it right now with cattle. There's all this, you were just literally hearing the other day in Congress about, oh, this is bad. All the cattle farmers are complaining about they're being gouged. And guess what? They don't do anything. That's what bothers me. I mean, look in Minnesota alone, you have Cargill. I mean, Cargill is one of the titans here. And everyone kind of talks about, you see a lot of Minnesota politicians will talk about, oh, we have problems here, but no one will name names.
Mm-hmm.
No one will actually say what needs to be done. It's just, oh, this is a problem.
And by the way, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it just reminded me of my mom. My mom had a bakery when I was little, and she always like kind of, you know, we'd always help out, and she'd always tell me, don't do something if you're going to do it half, insert your rear end word. But that's just what you constantly see here.
And you do, and we should mention, as you talk about this in the animal farming sector, we had the same thing with Crystal Sugar up in the sugar beets that they basically, you know, a very corporate structure there that put a lot of people out of work, and they went against the union and fought that. I mean, it's very different structure here. Bringing in as well, also, you know, and you talk about it's with the cow lots right now, the dairy industry in Wisconsin a few years ago was getting wiped out. Part of the problem here is that, yes, there are a lot of people in rural America who are like, this business model just can't sustain these communities. We're not getting gutted by Minneapolis, St. Paul, or Des Moines, or Omaha, or Chicago. We're getting gutted by the corporations who basically are telling us it's Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Des Moines, and Omaha, and Chicago. The reality is you got a lot of people in rural America who know this problem's going on, but yet do not want to point the finger at the real culprit, which is killing rural America, which are these large corporate farms.
I would even say they're not even American corporations anymore. I mean, the largest owner of hogs and the largest owner of pork slaughterhouse in America is WH Group of China. They own Smithfield. The largest owner of beef is JBS, a Brazil company. You can keep going down the list for yogurt, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
Which that's just a whole different ballgame. Like, we're basically destroying Iowa to provide meat to China. Or for a Chinese multinational corporation, you know, where the CEO makes $280 million, you know, and then people in Iowa are left earning like $12 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a whole other ballgame. The other thing, too, though, is, I mean, you'll see this up at that farm show. These conversations aren't going to be had because what pays the bills at the farm show? It's all the Smithfield tents. It's all the Monsanto tents.
Yes.
And with the collapse of local news, I mean, like, with these, you know, what we've seen happen with all this power being concentrated in Google and Facebook, these ag publications rely on those the big ads from Smithfield. So they're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. And so, like, that to me is actually a thing, is like a lot of these stories just aren't being told. And like, a lot of people don't even realize the extent of the issue.
Well, there's a reason, Austin, I'm talking to you, because I went to the FarmFest page and you are 1,000% correct. It's all massive corporations. I said, I don't want someone just doing a press release here, because they're not going to give me a straight answer. And so that's why I had you on the air, is because I know what we're going to talk about, what is really plaguing the ag sector and the economics behind it right now. You know, Austin Frerich is joining us once again. He's done a great Vox article. I'll list to that. I'll list to his webpage as well, as he's working on fixing the food system. I want to get, you know, my last question for you is, you know, you do seem to have hope that we can fix this. What would we need to do if we want to really change the economic model and not just make you know, farming a more sustainable, fairer product for all farmers in rural America, but really save rural America itself from the dwindling population that eventually is just going to leave the most of this country empty.
I mean, I say this as a personal person who's a Democrat. Democrats need a vision for agriculture. They don't have one right now.
I agree.
They're just an urban party and they kowtow to what the Republicans say. And it's not just about agriculture. We need to talk about the food system. Like people like my dad who drive stuff, people like my mom who ran a bakery, they're in the food system. Once you talk about the food system and how it should be, you're talking about 1 in 10 Americans. And that's where I have hope, is that's how you build a new coalition around these issues. Because the dirty secret about these big ag multinationals is they've hollowed out their membership, their voting base. You pull together those Adina suburban moms when you're talking about food quality for their kids at schools. You're talking about serving, you know, local food. You're bringing in, you know, like all beef served in Minneapolis should be coming from Minnesota beef farmers. That's how you pull together a coalition. And that to me, what gives me hope is like localizing these food supply chains. It doesn't make sense with climate change, where 70% of the apple juice in America is coming from China. Like you're literally shipping water halfway across the world. I mean, that's what's so funny about all this. It's just none of it really makes sense. And it's breaking before us. And the question is do we have the political will and courage to move to a new, better system?
It is remarkable because, it's funny. Governor Walz, when he was this Congressman Walz down the first, he came on this show and he gave the best answer I've ever heard from the rural America about why you have food assistance programs, because I can get my product from my farmers into schools where hungry kids need it. They get paid, kids get fed, good Minnesota product, and that's that. And the reality is that, you know, you have to have that mentality that there is this, and we just had this in the state where, what was it, Tory Westrum, the Republican senator, wanted to kill a program that allowed people on food stamps to go to farmers markets and get local, you know, small produce, farmer produce food, because it's almost like, no, we need you to get that apple juice out of China. You're not going to be able to get this. It really is. We have a backwards mentality in this country. The DFL in Minnesota could definitely use from a much better ag policy, because the reality is you're spot on. The DFL is supposed to be Democratic Farm Labor, and they've almost completely forgotten the farm, and they need to reintroduce that, because that's what's going to save, I think, rural America.
100%. I mean, what that politician was just doing is basically doing the bidding of Cargill. They don't want you to buy anything local. They want you to buy some Cargill green, no matter where it comes from in the world. I mean, this is – the question isn't over – you go into any Dollar General in America, and it's, you know, it's chips and pop, and it's whatever PepsiCo is selling. Mm-hmm. I mean, our goal now is to improve the quality of that food. I mean, it's the cheapest way to reduce healthcare costs in America, yada, yada, yada. That to me is a conversation at this point.
Austin, anytime you want to come back to my show, dude, you are more than welcome.
Yeah, sorry, we were talking like a mile a minute, but I mean, is so fun, and it's so fun to talk about this stuff.
You know, you and I could talk. No, you and I, because I actually am 100. You and I actually are simpatico, my friend. I've lived all over the Midwest. I appreciate the farmer. It has been painful to watch old farmers look at their towns and see them die before their eyes. And the reality is they'll say, oh, you know, city slickers is like, not us. Go see that big farm down the road where they got the big house, where they got the gate that you can't get in, where he tells you it's the city people. No, it's not us. It's that guy. And until I think rural America, when rural America realizes that the corporate farm is not helping them, it's hurting them far more. And when the rest of the state realizes the value of the local produce, the local product, and we can make a system that is much more efficient, I think it's going to work well. But we just ran out of time today. You come back anytime. Austin Frerich is going to joining us. Once again, I'll link to his webpage, the Vox article that you have done. And when you get finished on this book, you come back. By all means, we'll have you on. We'll talk more about this, okay?
Yeah, you take care now.
Take care. Austin Frerich, kind enough to join us. 952-946-6205. We'll take a quick break. Come on back, wrap up the first hour when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. That was outstanding. We're spotlighting Austin Frerich. We're spotlighting that interview. There's so many points he made which are spot on. The fact that you don't have any journalism in these towns anymore that will actually speak out against these large corporate farms. That you basically, his point about the DFL, and I am, and the Democrats as a whole, is that the problem with Democrats is they get played by Republicans. And we'll say, let's talk about ag issues. And the Republicans will go, clean cars suck. And Democrats are like, hey, tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to get an 80-page, well-worded memo on why clean cars are the future of America. No one cares. They don't. They sidetrack you because of your passion. That your passion, you think your passion's going to win the day. It doesn't. This is not rocket science. They make food, okay? We eat food. Ta-da! You figure out a way to make, and exactly what Austin said, you figure out a way to get Minnesota farmers to get their Minnesota product into the Twin Cities so Minnesotans in the cities are eating the Minnesota farmers' food, and you're going to solve a lot of these problems. Because the reality is he is right. There are a lot of people who are basically incensed by the idea of a Minnesota apple farmer. I'll just pull an apple farmer out. Producing an apple and making apple juice here locally and selling it to their local school. Trust me when I say corporate America doesn't want that. They've got a mass-produced, sugar-laced crap apple product from some foreign country that they have marketed and packaged. And damn it, if that school district is taking the local product, that's less money for them. And so they will have a hired, paid-for hitman politician try to stop a good program from happening because it's about corporate profits over what's best for the farmer. And if you are seen as the DFL in this state and you are going out there and you're saying, no, I want the Minnesota farmer to produce the apple juice that the kids are drinking, not China, and you put it back on them, every farmer in that community is going to turn to the Republican and say, and you want to do what again? Exactly. It's not rocket science here. Get the food from Minnesota farmers into the mouths of Minnesotans. You figure out how to do that, guess what? You're going to win a lot of votes in rural Minnesota. Hour two of the show up next. God, still reeling from Austin Frerich's interview. How about the notion that, yeah, Brett Johnson joining me in studio. How about the notion that Amazon could buy Tyson Foods and wouldn't even bat an eye? It would show up on their annual report, but it's, yeah, we used just the money from the leftover money from the parts we sold from his rocket. We bought Tyson Foods. Jeff Bezos.
If you have enough money to launch a rocket into space and buy a company as big as Tyson Foods.
Without even thinking about it.
Yeah. If that's just like a write-off, we'll drop our petty cash on buying Tyson Foods.
You know, you said something that, and of course, Patrick here as well here. The one of the things that you said right before we went on the air, and I think it just kind of resonates with me, is the difference between the Gilded Age and today is the Gilded Age, the company towns fought back. And whether that was up in the Iron Range, the steel workers there, the workers in the cities of Minneapolis, farmers, they fought back. And they said, no, you're not going to treat us like this. It seems like what corporate America learned is like, okay, we'll just wipe out the entire community. And then there's no one really to start organizing or anything. So mission accomplished.
Corporations are learning. Isn't that
They're learning, and they sadly have bought off pretty much every politician.
And as you said, there's no local media in those towns, so they're just getting fed the corporate lines.
Two stories I want to bring up with you before we get to Cooligan here in just a second. But the first one is a story that has quickly developed online, and it's quickly developed because a lot of people are kind of torqued at this guy, but as well torqued at the response from the airline. I don't know if you saw this one. A 22-year-old Ohio man was taken into custody on Tuesday after he had to be duct-taped to his seat for assaulting flight attendants in the middle of a flight. ABC 6 Philadelphia reports Maxwell Berry of Norwalk, Ohio, became belligerent on a flight to Florida after he'd had a couple of drinks. At one point, he allegedly started grabbing two female flight attendants' breasts. At which point a male flight attendant was called to put Perry back in his seat and keep an eye on him. This did not calm Barry down, who started screaming at both airline employees and fellow passengers. You guys blank suck, he yelled. My parents are worth $2 million.
Oh, man.
Thanks, Austin Powers. $2 million. Okay. All right. First of all, great for mom and dad. I'm sure they appreciate being dragged into this. That being said, It's a nice little nest egg. Don't get me wrong. That's a nice little nest egg. I'm not downplaying it. It's not like it's Bezos money, dude. You know, you're not going to Fry Festival on $2 million.
I was
going to
make that same comment that sadly $2 million when it comes to the world of the 1% actually is not a lot of money.
Well, it is, but what I'll say is this, because I'm not going to, I don't want to say that because, I mean, there's a lot of people like, what are you talking about, man?
Well, that's
they're
right,
gonna,
yeah,
they're
yeah.
going to have a very comfortable retirement. They'll be able to do some travel, maybe buy a boat. You know, they've got $2 million. I don't know how they got it. Did they inherit it? Did they earn it? Regardless, dude, you are bragging about something that's like, I got cheese on my Big Mac. You know, stop. You know, it's kind of it's okay. You know, I'm glad you're happy there, but no one's kind of I've got $46. My parents have $46.57. Yes.
I got a feeling since he said that, he's probably got the type of parents that are going to defend him and say, well, our son was a perfect little angel on flight crew.
Oh, there's video.
Oh, okay.
That's why I think this is blown up. We got the video of this guy. The male flight attendant tried to get him to calm down, at which point, because he got $2 million. I mean, that's some big talking money right there. At which point, Barry punched him. A group of passengers helped the flight staff restrain Barry, who was then duct taped to his seat for the remainder of the flight. According to ABC 6 Philadelphia, Barry was charged with 3 counts of battery and taken to Miami-Dade County Jail. T.G. Gacy, welcome to Miami. I could call mom and dad with that $2 million because you're going to need bail. T.G.K. Correctional Center after the play landed. The flight attendant, by the way, and this is also why I think people are upset. The flight attendant who duct taped Barry to his seat has been temporarily suspended pending an investigation, which the airline says is standard procedures for these incidents. Dude, I don't think that dude did anything wrong. Well, first of all, he's groping. He's sexually assaulting. Let's not call it grope. He's sexually assaulting the airline stewardess. He is not following orders. He clearly has no gauge of financial matters. I mean, that's more of an educational issue, I think, here. He clearly doesn't care about how his parents think he looks. And he can't hold his liquor. There's a lot of things here. You did the right thing. I'm with the guy that duct taped him down. I personally would have probably taken off his shirt and duct taped him down and said, enjoy that one when they take it off there.
He waxed on.
Wow, that's well. He's in Miami. I mean, if you're in Miami, as Miami,
maybe they're doing him a favor. Yeah,
as well, making a Brazilian. Here we go. That would be okay. Wait a minute here. If he did strip him down naked and then duct tape him to the seat, it might have crossed a line or two. But he'll be ready for the beaches of Miami after that. Once you get bail. The other story I had goes back to you and I talked about this a little bit yesterday, also goes back to the coronavirus update. How many players on the Vikings have not been vaccinated for COVID-19? The exact number or even a ballpark number is unclear. I think we can figure out from Zimmer's reaction, it's not just one or two. The Vikings own one of the NFL's lowest vaccination rates. On Tuesday, NFL Network Tom Pelissero reported that 90% of the league's players had received at least one vaccine dose, while local reports have said the Vikings have NFL's lowest rate, with only 70% receiving one dose and 64% fully vaccinated. The Vikings have yet to confirm those numbers. The bigger deal, perhaps, is that Graf, citing sources, says 5 Viking starters haven't been vaccinated. Kirk Cousins is one of the 5 by default since he's on a 5-day minimum quarantine. Hey, you kept that one secret from us, Kirk. After being considered a high-risk close contact with quarterback Kellen Mond, who tested positive on COVID-19 on Saturday, Mond is sick from COVID-19, according to Purple Insider's Matthew Collar, who attended Tuesday's press conference with offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak. Vikings owner Mark Wilf also spoke Tuesday and said he's very concerned about players who are hesitant to get the vaccine. We are very concerned. I think it's safe to say our number one priority is the health and safety of our players, our coaches, staff, and ultimately the entire community, said Wilf. Players who are vaccinated do not need to quarantine, so Cousins clearly has received the vaccine. The 4 other starters Graf cited are unknown, although Wide Island said safety Harrison Smith hadn't been vaccinated as recently as mid-June. There's quite a few guys that are against it, and I'm not going to be – and I'm great, okay? If you guys really feel this way, if this is really a religion, and this is – because it's religion or a health issue, those are the two reasons that they will you cannot have this, but you do have to follow these protocols. The problem is I don't think it's your religion. I think it's just you're brainwashed by far-right politics wrapped in religion, and you think you're doing something noble and
and you know, and you know, Christian and pious and all these things. The reality is I think you're being fools because you and I said it yesterday. If you're the player that causes his team to forfeit a game and you lose either the NFC North title because of said forfeit or a playoff appearance, nothing will unify this state faster.
It's just unbelievable that we're that low. I know Washington, their football team was struggling, and their coach is a cancer survivor, and he's pleading with his players to get vaccinated.
Well, if I was doing something, I'm playing a kid's sport, and it is. I mean, they're big boys hitting each other, but it's kid's sport. And I've got the luxury of doing this, and I get paid hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars a year to play a sport. And all I have to do, if I've already get the flu shot, the mindset of these people, I mean, you have to own the libs. You have to win this fight. Just get vaccinated, you fools. What are you sacrificing? I mean, you're going to lose because don't they lose their money too if they can't play?
Yeah. Well, think about this too, is the perspective of a professional athlete. How much stuff are you putting into your body? It's like painkillers and other substances. Oh, but this COVID vaccine, this is where I draw the line.
They're tracking me with the vaccine. Let me show you the data on my cell phone. Really? Oh, okay. Yeah. Tracking you on your with the vaccine, but not the cell phone, you don't think. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You're right. I mean, how much creatine beta product, this Bulkmaster 5000 triple X that they put into themselves. But hey, I want to be careful with a vaccine.
The unmarked package from China that's going to enhance my performance on the field. That's okay going in my body. Sure. But this vaccine that's saving lives and has been thoroughly tested, well, I can't trust that.
Sure thing, Peyton Manning. Question for you. You know who's one of the most sticky people about this? Hasn't Brady been vaccinated? Tom Brady on Tampa? The MVP?
That I am not sure.
I think he has.
Do you know Patrick?
Do you know Patrick would know this?
I'm not actually sure either.
Well, you've been stalking him. There's a restraining order, right? I'm sorry. No, he's not. Well, I think he has. I think he said that, you know, because, you know, I think he said something to the effect of, I'm not for this. It was before the Biden thing when they went to the White House. He said, I'm not necessarily for this, but I'm not stupid. And I'm going to get this done because we want to win a championship. And I'm being on the bench is not the way to do it. I think he did.
And he's a Trump guy, too, so well, even he did it.
He did take a few swipes at Trump when he was at the Biden thing.
Well, that's true, yeah.
I think they appreciated the non-cold Big Macs and chicken nuggets and the lineup that they had for them at the White House with Biden on that. But, it blows the mind. But once again, maybe, you know, what these people need is the ridicule. And I just think, I mean, if you're that dumb, I mean, it's one thing when a person who is not – making hundreds of thousands of dollars per game, per day, doing something and saying, I'm not going to do it. But you got this all this money on the line, and then you're going to of course, if you get benched during the season because of COVID, you're going to sit and bellyache and talk about how it's unfair. I have no pity for you. None whatsoever.
Those forfeits, that's going to change everything. The first one we see from any team.
First one. And imagine if it's like week one, and that's the game that cost you. Oh, my God. Oh, they will not be able to recover on that. 952-946-6205. I tell you what, let's get into this. Patrick Cooligan, of course, Minnesota Reformer, kind enough to join us usually on Tuesdays. What are you guys talking about today?
Yeah, continuing on our vaccination theme, we'll be talking about the U of M possibly requiring vaccinations at their college, which I think would be a good idea, considering they already require vaccinations for several other infectious diseases. So we'll be talking about that and a little bit with the drama that, of course, is going on with the Senate DFL right now and, unfortunately, those sexual assault allegations.
Well, we'll hear it from Patrick Cooligan, Minnesota Reformer, right here with Brett Johnson on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson here on a Tuesday afternoon as we're joined for our usual Tuesday visit with Patrick Cooligan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. For the latest in Minnesota politics and news, make sure you go to minnesotareformer.com and support them, as we'll be talking through a couple of stories today that have been in the Minnesota political news landscape. Patrick, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Always good to be here.
All right, so let's start off with this controversy that has enveloped the DFL over the past week or so, and that has to do with something Ricardo Lopez broke last week, and that is this DFL staffer by the name of Cynthia Calais, who now works for the Teachers Union and is no longer employed by the Senate DFL, as she said she left her Senate job in January after attempting to find a remedy to what she called repeated sexual harassment by Clay Schwartzwalter, who is the half-brother of State Senator Jason Isaacson, who is a DFLer from Shoreview. He's also the former campaign manager back in 2020 of Senate Minority Leader Susan Kent. And what Calais says is that basically her accusations of sexual harassment against Clay Schwartzwalter were... they didn't necessarily receive the level of treatment she would have liked to have seen from the Senate, which really contrasts with the way that the House dealt with a complaint against Schwartzwalter. If you can fill us in a little bit more on what happened, Patrick.
Yeah, a few things pop out about this story about the management of an employee's sexual harassment complaint. The first is that it's almost hard to believe that this kind of thing would happen only 4 years after the Me Too movement started, and it cost two legislators their jobs. If you remember, in 2017, we had two resignations, one the Senate, a DFL senator, and a Republican House member who left after allegations of sexual harassment. So in this case, you have a kind of a junior operative, Mr. Schwartzwalter, who's accused of sexually harassing Cynthia Calais. And it continues over two separate jobs. And what's even more awkward about the whole thing is that Schwartzwalter is the half-brother of her boss, Jason Isaacson. I should note that Schwartzwalter has said that the allegations have been mischaracterized, or in some cases they're grossly untrue. His half-brother, Senator Isaacson, says he can't comment because of Senate HR rule, personnel rules. The Senate Minority Leader, Susan Kent of Woodbury, who only recently ascended to leadership, taking down longtime leader Tom Bach, she's defended her handling of the situation. But it certainly doesn't look great when you have this guy in two separate roles, allegations of sexual harassment. He was forced to resign from the campaign. He goes back to work at the House, and another person makes allegations of sexual harassment. We don't know exactly why he was fired, but he acknowledges that he was dismissed from there as well. And then even after all this, Cynthia Calais, the younger staff person who talked to us, she now goes back to work for the first Senator Isaacson, and you can imagine how awkward that might be when Isaacson's half brother is alleged to have harassed her. She asks for some kind of mediation with her boss, and John Pollard, the Senate Democratic chief of staff, is apparently close to Isaacson. Not only that, but he also rented a room to Schwartzwalter during the campaign season previously. So it's a really bad look there. And Pollard tells Cynthia Calais, well, sorry, it's not really our job to mediate some discussion with your boss, Senator Isaacson. It's somewhat understandable because the senator has an election certificate. They're kind of their own boss. It's not like the DFL chief of staff is Jason Isaacson's boss. It's not really how it works. But on the other hand, given Me Too and given this new era, it seems like a reasonable request that Calais made, and one that they ought to at least try to have met. She was frustrated and started looking for another job and left. And so I don't think that's the outcome that she wanted, and certainly a lot of DFL senators are now frustrated with how the whole situation was handled by leadership. And so that's kind of where we are right now in the story.
And make sure you go and read that piece from Ricardo Lopez in the Minnesota Reformer. There is a lot of details to the story, so make sure you check that out over at MinnesotaReformer.com. But in terms of the latest developments with what's happening in the situation right now, we do have, I believe, over 30 House DFL staffers that are showing solidarity as late Friday. A number of them, as well as State Senator Carrie Zizek of Minneapolis, joined by Melissa Franz of Edina, Lindsay Port of Burnsville, Aaron Murphy of St. Paul, they all joined in calling for an investigation. So, yeah, this is not a good situation, I would think, for Susan Kent, being a newly elected Senate Minority Leader, at least relatively newly elected Senate Minority Leader, as well as for State Senator Jason Isaacson, with now we have other DFLers saying, no, we really do need an investigation into what happened.
Right, and you may not believe it, that in politics we have some opportunism going on, but it certainly looks a little like Senator Melissa Franzen maybe sees an opportunity here, that if this whole scandal should cost Minority Leader Kent her job, someone would have to step in. But of course I would never... never say that it was opportunism. Senator Franzen, I'm sure is, I'm sure actually, and I mean this sincerely, is concerned about how staff are treated and about creating a safe workplace in the Senate. But definitely there's, I think there's a lot of consternation in that caucus right now. They're going to meet tomorrow and we'll have to see what comes of it.
As of now, have we heard any possible moves in terms of a change of leadership at the Senate DFL, or are we still waiting for more facts to play out or more word from the DFL in terms of what could happen if Susan Kent were to possibly lose that position as Senate Minority Leader?
Yeah, I think we're kind of waiting on Ricardo to work his reporting magic on that. I think I think the discussions are being had, mm-hmm. The time to do it would be now, because you're really going into the important season of raising money and recruiting candidates. And you really want to be at the top of your game as you start to go into this 2022 cycle.
Let's move on to another piece that's in the Minnesota Reformer today, Patrick. Again, MinnesotaReformer.com. And this is an op-ed written by Tyler Blackman, who is a law student at the University of Minnesota, as he wrote an opinion piece titled, "For the U of M, It's Time to Mandate the Vaccine." As he talks about, which I find kind of interesting, is that when he applied to the U of M, they're requiring vaccinations for things like tetanus, measles, mumps, and rubella, but no COVID-19. And he brings up that other private colleges and even some large businesses and government agencies are requiring vaccination. So I think it brings up a fair point right here that there is probably going to be more pressure put on the University of Minnesota and other colleges around the state to mandate a vaccine.
Yeah, I feel like there's been a little bit of a shift with this fourth wave and the Delta variant. First of all, we've seen a sharp increase in the last week in the number of people getting vaccinated. I also have a sense, just from talking to a couple politicos, they're far less concerned about backlash against the vaccine mandates than they were a few months ago, when it was sort of a key Republican talking point that there could be no mandates. One reason is because you can say, okay, we're going to have vaccine mandates, but that means we don't have to have mask mandates. And I think a lot of the public likes that idea. But from a substantive standpoint, it is hard to understand why the U wouldn't. A lot of universities, as he noted, a lot of colleges and universities have instituted these mandates, and it's hard to understand why they wouldn't do so at the U.
All right, a final piece I want to talk to you about today, Patrick, has to do with what Rylan Eichens reports today as Minnesota's economic recovery in 8 charts. That's what Rylan wrote about. And, well, being that we are radio and not TV, we can't show you those 8 charts, so we'll just go through some of the highlights from the piece. And I want to start off with at least the general consensus, which seems to be that we are slowly starting to return to normal, but maybe not as quickly as we would like, according to a number of economists. And I think a big part of that has to do with the Delta variant here in Minnesota and the country, why the anticipated recovery has been going a little bit slower than we would probably like.
Yeah, and this is not surprising that we would have kind of a strange recovery, given that it was a strange recession. It was so sudden and so sharp, there's kind of all these new challenges about like supply bottlenecks and so forth, that the recovery, I think, is going to be just very little unpredictable, sometimes a little slow. And we're going to have to take kind of a wait and see approach. We have recovered a lot of the jobs, not all of them. Our unemployment reacted down quite a bit. But there's the usual problems that we have with recessions, and that is that people of color, when mm-hmm. those are way off, unfortunately too often the last to get hired, first to get fired, and then they're the last to get hired again once a recovery starts. So we're seeing that again. So that's something that policymakers probably need to focus on.
Yeah, and the other thing is you talked about how for people of color, unfortunately, the recovery has not been going as smoothly as it has for people who are white. The other part I wanted to talk about is that Minnesota's labor participation rate fell to 67.8% back in April of 2020, which was the lowest we've seen in 30 years. Now, we're back up to about 68% right now, but concerns definitely still persist for child care and COVID safety, and I'm glad that this was brought up, because those are two things that I think are often not talked about when we see signs put up at businesses saying, nobody wants to work, we can't hire anybody. I think a lot of people still are very concerned about, well, COVID safety and making sure they're staying safe, and of course, if you have kids, being able to find child care. So that jumped out at me as well as I was reading through the piece today.
Right. Women have also been hit very hard in this recession, and part of the reason is the inability to get childcare and school cancellations and so forth. That has definitely hurt our overall labor participation rate, which traditionally has been one of the best in the country and remains so. It's definitely fallen, as you noted, and we're going to have to see where that goes.
Well, you can check out that piece over at MinnesotaReformer.com, as well as lots of other great news around the world of Minnesota news and politics. Again, MinnesotaReformer.com. That is Patrick Houlihan. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, as he joins us every Tuesday. Patrick, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Good to be here. Thanks.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil up next on AM 950.
Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyo Studios at AM 950, it is the Matt McNeil Show. I couldn't find if Brady has been vaccinated. Did you see anywhere on that, Patrick? Were you able to pull that up anywhere?
No, there was no information either way on that.
Let's see here. Brady, victorious Tampa Bay Buccaneers, made their customary trip to the White House on Tuesday. Biden and reigning champions brought their share of jokes. Biden, playful exchange by pointing out 43-year-old Brady's advanced age within football realm and relating his own age, late stage rise in the pinnacle there. Brady joined the jovial nature visit and turned to the podium, arrived offering his own humor and a brief speech. Not a lot of people think we could have won. In fact, I think about 40% of the people still don't think I won, which was a shot at Trump. Brady lobbed one more joke before stepping away from the microphone, referencing his own mental error made during the 2020 season. Get the shot. I mean, he was talking about it. And of course, Bruce Arians, the coach of the Buccaneers, was saying amen. So I'm not sure. I mean, Brady is very particular about this, but I also, he is one of those guys that just does not he doesn't mess with, he wants championships. He understands what his kind of legacy is. And don't get me wrong, Tom Brady, there's a lot of people that dislike him, and there's a lot of reasons to dislike the guy. He wants to win. I remember the story that one of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers was excited after they won the NFC Championship. And Brady went over to him, kind of grabbed him by the face back and says, "We haven't won anything yet. We've got a game, the Super Bowl, we've got to win. And so anyone that thinks we've won anything is a fool." And it's one of those things that only a guy that has more Super Bowl rings than anyone else would ever say, be able to say, but he was right. So, you know, if you got that kind of mentality, there have been too many nurses and doctors lately who have been just, they're not pulling any punches anymore. They call it what it is, selfishness. You're not getting vaccinated. It's just, you're selfish. And don't get me wrong, there are a small percentage of people, there is a legitimate religious issue or if there's a health issue, of course, that's something you got to be careful with. But the reality is most of these people, they just don't want to be wrong on following that far right-wing mantra and feel as if they get vaccinated, even though it's their career, even though it's, you know, it could cost them games, it could cost them money, cost them all these things, they would rather complain about how I'm a victim because they took my paycheck away. And that would be their biggest concern, as opposed to costing their team to forfeit a game, costing their team a playoff chance, costing, you know, it's just, it's selfishness. Get over yourselves, okay? You're just, all you're doing is you're just circulating the same lies over and over again, and that's just as toxic as circulated air in an internal building at this point. And, you know, it is a sports team, but it's like, once again, most people, I mean, I know plenty of people that work minimum wage jobs that are making less than $30,000 a year who the second they could get vaccinated ran in and got one done because they said they understand how dangerous this is. They don't have what's on the line like you guys do, and yet you act as if there's somehow you're going to win the day and go start your own, what, Christian football league, and where you can put forward Republican talking points as mantra. Good luck with that. Go. Seriously, just go. Go start the Christian Football League. Let's go start the right-wing talking points football league. Let me ask you something. You think that if you really are pushing a political narrative, I want you to go to the state fair this year. Go to the Minnesota GOB booth, unvaccinated, and take your mask off and say, "Force me out of here." Because I can tell you right now, you will be grabbed and chucked out of there fast. As much as the Minnesota GOP probably likes to dance around this idea that they're, "Oh, are we for masks or against it?" Well, I say I am, but I also mock them. And I'm against mask mandates. Am I for vaccines or against them? I think they're important, but I kind of enable these people to think conspiracy theories are okay. And the reality is you go to that Minnesota State Fair booth, go to the Minnesota GOB, take off your mask, say, "I'm unvaccinated, I'm here." I guarantee you, you'll be escorted out of that booth real fast. Real fast. Good luck with that. But hey, I guess you think you're winning. Good luck with that. And God forbid, I mean, God, can you imagine the story of, say, you know, I won't even attach a specific player to this. Say one of the players dies of COVID, 20-some-year-old guy, prime of his life, great physical condition, dies of COVID. You think that will change their minds? Probably not. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break, get caught back up. Got a few more news to get to. I'm disappointed. I'll get to that in a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Boy, I have been watching footage from 1996 of Democrats trying to do the Macarena. God, they were so white. Holy God. I mean, I've watched my dancing that I do on Fridays here, and I'm like, ooh, Ugh. Ugh. But that is like, it must be like the first time someone actually made music. And the guy's like, oh, okay, I can feel something going on, but I don't quite know what to do. And of course, it's the Macarena, so yeah, it's like powder fell into a marshmallow fluff rolling down a glacier in the middle of Pluto. It is just white. I'm glad our city, every once in a while, our city breaks out into spontaneous dance parties, and it is one of the coolest things about Minneapolis is all of a sudden, hey, a whole bunch of people over there dancing. All right, maybe I'll go join them. Maybe I won't. I'll learn how to do it. The electric slide, it's always good. It's a game changer. Anyway, the but that was not a proud moment in history there. The Macarena in 1996. It was not. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let me begin this by saying this. Damn it, Mike Lindell! Ugh! Damn it, Mike! You just did it again, didn't you? You just did it again. The Sasquatch Show, where you spend the entire hour. You've been on the air for, what, 12 years talking about Sasquatches. And we're out in the middle of the woods. And I'm like, oh, we got something compelling this week. And at the end of the show, you say, well, that wasn't a Sasquatch. But next week, we're going to have a Sasquatch. You did it again, Mike Lindell. QAnon followers are growing restless and could turn violent, officials have warned, as MyPillow founder Mike Lindell continues to push back a timeline for his conspiracy theory about former President Trump's reinstatement into office. Lindell previously said Trump's reinstatement would happen sometime this month. No, August 13th. August 13th, Mike Lindell has said he's going to release all the information, and it's going to be so shocking that Biden's going to resign, Kamala Harris is going to resign, and somehow, even though the chain of command goes to Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, that somehow that either she's just going to get out of the way and let Trump ascend to the office, or, and here's the, this is really, this is delusional, the Congressional Black Caucus is going to sign with the right wing, and they're going to have enough votes to basically replace Nancy Pelosi with Donald Trump, which they could legally do, and that then he would become president. And that's all going to happen. What's the day today? The 3rd of August. We got 10 days to one of the hugest moments in the history of this country. That's supposed to happen. This wasn't just, this is what's supposed to happen. You've got the evidence. You've got the evidence. You've got this, that the Supreme Court's going to get out of the way, that the Congress is going to get out. No one is going to question. You have such concrete, solid evidence that I want to repeat what he suggested, that Joe Biden will resign because the evidence is so compelling that he did not win, that he'll just get out of the way. That's August 13th. That's a week from Friday. I've already got decorations ordered for the Trump Part 2 Electric Boogaloo. Well, he's not going to be dancing. Speaking of white, orange. Mandela said that Trump's reinstatement would happen sometime this month, followed by a symposium where he would somehow be revealed that Trump had in fact won the 2020 presidential election, even though, FYI, news break, he didn't. It's actually one of the larger beatdowns in a presidential election in the last few decades, so just FYI. But on Monday, Lindell told the Daily Beast that he could be September. Damn it, Mike! We're going to have to wait for next week's episode for the Sasquatch, aren't we? Or perhaps even later, before Trump is reinstated based on the false claims of election fraud, assuming Lindell doesn't reschedule again. We'll be bringing our findings to the Supreme Court in late August or early September. Okay, it's not like you can just walk in. It's it's not like you just walk in and like one of the justices was working the front desk and say, oh, is that a court case? Let's take a look at that. That's not how it works, the Supreme Court. And if you've got the evidence, and Mike, you have said you have all this evidence already. Why do you need to wait till late August, man? Go now to the drive-through Supreme Court. Oh, you know why it's a Supreme Court, right? Sour cream. That's why. Mike, you got all this. You've got all this. You're ready to go. This is not you. It's not like you're saying, are you saying you didn't have this and you were saying you had this? You say you've got all this. Why are you waiting till the end of August? It's time to show us the Sasquatch, man. It's time for you to go to the Supreme, drive-through Supreme Court. You think you can, I guess, drive through and drop off things like it's the cleaners. Is it too late for breakfast? Anyway, we'll be bringing our findings to the Supreme Court in late August or early September, sometime after the cyber symposium ends and it proves it was an attack on China. Lindell says, when I gave my prediction about August, that was several months ago. That was a few weeks ago, dude. Months. That was an estimate of the time, but it took so long to get the symposium set up. However long. You've got the evidence. The symposium is not. You've got the speech. Now you're saying, well, it took us a long time to build that podium from IKEA. You've got the stuff, apparently. Now you're saying, well, we don't like how the. It's, I'm starting to wonder if Mike Lindell actually has evidence of fraud. I think it's time for us to start having that question. Does he really have the? Because he could just, I don't know, call a press conference right now. I mean, he's a big enough name. He could have every major news network there, you know, a video screen, whatever technology he needs. They'd set it up for him, for goodness sakes. And he could release all the information that he's got in regards to this fraud. And yet now all of a sudden, even after a symposium, which he's supposed to reveal all this information, it's still not. Disappointed. We'll be bringing our findings to the Supreme Court in late August, early September, sometime after symposium ends and it proves it was attacked by China. Lindell says, when I give my prediction about August, it was several months ago, and that's the estimate of the time, but it took so long to get the symposium set up. However long it takes for the Supreme Court to take it up and decide on this, I can't predict that. I'm not the Supreme Court. No, that's not something you had to tell us there, Mike. That is. Do you come with a side of sour cream? No. Okay. You're not the Supreme Court, Mike. And generally, it starts in a lower court. They find a ruling. They appeal it up. And gets eventually, Supreme Court decides, never mind. It will be a surprise. Let him find out, okay? Meanwhile, here's a problem. QAnon followers who previously adopted Lindell's August timeline have been busy concocting new conspiracy theories, including that Trump's reinstatement will coincide with the upcoming test of the National Emergency Alert System when the former president could announce mass arrests of Democrats. The Daily Beast reports others have pointed to the rise of COVID-19 Delta variant as a sign the Democrats are planning a mid-August lockdown to distract from voter fraud, while still others say vaccine mandates for military service members will inspire an armed forces revolt. I got news for you. When you join the military, I joined the military, they give you a whole bunch of vaccines. One more is not going to affect them. QAnon influencer Ron Watkins, and by the way, if you've not watched that QAnon special, Watkins shows up in it. If you've not seen Ron Watkins, QAnon thing, you should watch that. He claimed Monday that a whistleblower release of manuals for voting machines made by Dominion will lead to the election being overturned, even though those manuals were already publicly available. And once again, that Dominion and these other companies are suing everyone for billions. Although QAnon followers are used to false prophecies, some expressed frustration with Watkins. Let's see some blank because we're all tired of waiting and trusting, one wrote in response. And their growing frustration could easily morph into violence, as the Department of Homeland Security has repeatedly warned. The Daily Beast cites a recent study of the global network of extremists and technology. Perhaps the largest concern arising from these failed predictions is that QAnon supporters are beginning to feel led to take matters into their own hands after seeing. Yeah, and that's something that, you know, it's clearly is a problem, is that you do have some people here who are waiting for this all to happen. They've been told it's going to happen. And every time it gets put off, well, is it going to happen? And they might start doing some bad things. You guys say you have the evidence. You guys said it was going to be released on August 13th. It's so shocking of evidence that even Biden himself is going to get out of the way for Trump. I think you guys have painted yourself in the corner at this point. I don't think you have the ability to say August or September or October. You either have to come on out and say, I've got the evidence, here it is, on the 13th, or else you need to basically admit the truth so that we don't have a bunch of freaking idiots out there starting to gun down people in the streets because they think that you guys are holding out on them. And frankly, you think the lawsuits from these election companies, these voting machine companies are bad? Wait until basically people say, well, you know, those guys told me that this was going to happen. And they basically, you know, scramble to try to find some way to not be part of that lawsuit, because that won't be fines. That will be jail time. So if you got the evidence, come forward with it. It's time to fish or cut bait. But there is no more cutting bait. You either come forward with the evidence, or else you admit that this is all just another attempt to get you to watch next week's Sasquatch show. 952-946-6205. One final break. We'll come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. A judge sentenced Alano Lakes man to probation, and stripped his rights to vote for 5 years for attacking a couple holding a sign critical of former President Trump on a White Bear Lake street corner. Mark Earl Sacker, 51, of Lino Lakes, pleaded guilty in Ramsey County District Court to two felony counts of threats of violence in connection with the attack on November 8th, where he allegedly swung a golf club at an elderly man and woman and punched the man in the head. So he actually punched the guy in the head. Judge Andrew Hsu, H-H-S-H-E-U, sentenced Olsacker to 100 hours of community service and gave him credit for the 4 days he spent in jail after the incident. The judge dismissed charges of assault with a dangerous weapon and assault on a police officer while resisting arrest. The sentence also includes 5 years of probation, during which Olsacker will be unable to vote in any elections, including the presidential election in 2024. He also cannot possess firearms during that time. The husband and wife, age 80 and 78, were among a group standing on a corner on Highway 96 and Centerville Road 5 days after voters chose Biden over President Trump. The woman said she and her husband were waving a homemade political sign with an anti-Trump message. Olsacker pulled up next to them in his pickup truck, shouted a vulgarity at them. Olsacker then walked up from behind and started swinging a golf club at their heads and punched the man in the head, according to a criminal complaint. Under questioning by police, Olsacker said he was a Trump supporter who was angry about the couple's sign. Dude, he punched an old guy in the head, and that's all he got? I hope they sue him in civil court and take every damn dime he's got. I hope they do. I really do. One last little observation I want to make here. Yesterday, I talked a little bit about that Rolling Stone article, which exposes a lot of ugliness in the Minneapolis Police Department. And I talked about how it's important that the people in Minneapolis who do realize the problem here has been the Minneapolis Police Department, that they get out there and they push that message and just share that story. And I want to encourage you to do so, because there's a huge difference. I shared that story last night, and if this was August of last year, I would have had, you know, 20, 30 people share that story. It would have been out in a lot more people. And I'm not saying that this is about, you know, my reach. It's more about people being active and being engaged in making sure people understood the story. Today, a few people shared it, but the reality is the reason why Minneapolis is losing this argument on what really is the problem is that we're not as engaged as we need to be. Find that Rolling Stone article. Share that with everyone across the country. It's important. Native Roots Radio, speaking of important, they're up next. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.